Do you remember this verse? You're looking a bit vague and a bit blank. What does this verse... Oh, you've put it up already. I was going to test them, but you've put it up already. They're well done. What does this... Well, thanks. What does this verse say? You're doing well, aren't you, this morning? You know, just put the words up now, James. Just hold on to this verse as we're working through this teaching series. They're going to come back now. We're gone forever now. Oh, there you go. Right, okay. So this is the key verse for this teaching series we're working through as we look at different themes in John's Gospel, as we consider what they mean to us, how we're going to respond to them, the difference we're going to let them make to our lives. That's the important bit. We're not just looking at John's Gospel because it conveniently leads us up to Easter. It does conveniently lead us up to Easter. But we want to know what it is about the Gospel. What is God saying to us? What difference will it make to our lives? And how will we respond to what God is saying to us here? John tells us these things are written so that you will put your faith in Jesus as the Messiah and the Son of God. If you have faith in him, you will have true life. So God, John's big purpose, is this about God restoring our brokenness of life, doing that through his love and grace, doing that through our response to Jesus, doing that so that he can heal our brokenness, make us whole, have our lives transformed through Jesus Christ. Amen? Amen. We need to keep responding to these words that God has given us. You know, what we've looked at so far seems to me to all be pretty attractive, really. Everything in John's Gospel that we've touched on so far. So we've had the Gospel of God's way through Jesus to show us how he is life-giving and empowering, filling us with light. It's Jesus, light of the world, the one that we follow. The one who transforms darkness into light, changes the impossible with the miraculous, heals and restores, includes everyone, offers healing and wholeness. Amen? Keep working with me. Come on. It seems to me that's all pretty attractive, isn't it? These are all big positive themes that we're looking at in John's Gospel. This next one that we're looking at today, maybe for some, shifts the focus a little bit. And causes a bit of a wobble. So we're going to be looking at today about how the gospel is directive and instructive. And being willing to take that direction and that instruction that God gives to us. You know, it seems to me that being willing to do that is not always so popular or welcomed, is it? If I'm saying to you, you need to take some direction and instruction, I wonder whether for some of us we have a bit of a reaction to that, a bit of a reaction against that kind of thought. Let me give you some examples. If I were to say to Grant, I'm going to come round tomorrow, Grant, and spend the day with you and direct you and instruct you how to be a proper teacher. Because just at the moment, I know better than you. Okay, so I'm going to come and direct and instruct you, right? So imagine I did that. Margaret Orbel's not here this morning. She's not very well. Imagine if I said to Margaret, Margaret, tomorrow I'm going to come round and see you and I'm going to direct and instruct you how to make jam properly. Yeah, exactly, Maureen, exactly. You know, I know you do some stuff with fruit and sugar and you put the jars in the oven for a bit to sterilize them and stuff like that. But Margaret, I'm going to tell you how to do it properly. Or how about this one, right? If I came to Michael and said, right, Michael, at the end of the service, said, right, Michael, some point this week, we're going to get together and through my direction and instruction, I'm going to teach you, finally, how to play your guitar properly. We'd get a reaction, wouldn't we? When someone comes at us and says, oh, look, listen, here's something I need to direct you in. Here's something I need to give you instruction in. And you're going to listen to me and you're going to respond well and it's going to transform your life. We get a reaction often to that, wouldn't we? You know, the world around us, perhaps my generation to a certain extent, particularly the next generation down, haven't grown up in a world where being ready to listen to people's direction and instruction is the common theme of life, is it? They're perhaps more ready to just make their own plans and go their own way. If it feels right for me, I'm free to do it. Don't tell me otherwise. That kind of attitude. So when we start talking about the gospel of Jesus Christ, as being the thing that is so valuable to us because it directs and instructs our life in right ways and good ways and all of that kind of stuff. We're going to need something pretty massively convincing to show people and to justify that claim, aren't we? If we're going to say to people, the gospel of Jesus Christ is a thing you need to shape your life around, to direct you and instruct you, we are going to need to know how to explain why we're making such a massive claim. Well, it's all here in John's gospel. We're covering quite a lot of ground. Generally speaking, I'm going to focus in on two particular parts of John's gospel this morning. But to kind of like give the background to the whole section we're looking at, in chapter 6, verses 25 to 59, Jesus is directing people there into a right focus on life. The disciples have seen him performing miracles and they're wanting some more of that. They're wanting some more of that, like, glory stuff. You know, they're wanting, do more of these miracles, Jesus. Do more of this because this is great. Let's have some more of this. But Jesus is directing them to think more about the whole of life, living by faith. Not hanging out just for the next big showy miracle thing going on. And then if we move into chapter 7, the first few verses of chapter 7, the disciples are encouraging Jesus there to think about his popularity. Think about how well you can get some fame here going on. And actually Jesus turns to them and says, that's not the best focus for your life. That's not the best thing to be running after. And then further into chapter 7, we've got verses here that give the first very clear and directive and instructive comment from Jesus in this part of John. And it's responded to with anger and frustration. The leaders of the day don't particularly much like what Jesus is saying to them. Along the way, through John's gospel, the two amazing examples that we're going to look at this morning of why Jesus has the right to be the one that we're listening to. He's the one who has the credentials, isn't he? He's the one that can say, listen to me because I want to teach you and I want to instruct you. I can't do that for Grant or for Margaret or for Michael in the examples that I gave. But Jesus has got the authority to speak in the way that he does. And he sets that in place with these two examples. I'm going to read from John chapter 10. I'm going to read the first 21 verses of John 10 and then just a few verses from the beginning of John 15 to set the scene for that section. So follow with me in your Bibles on your device, however, or listen. These are John recording the words of Jesus in this bit of John chapter 10. So Jesus says, I tell you the truth, the man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The man who enters by the gate is the shepherd of his sheep. The watchman opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all of his own sheep, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. They will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used this figure of speech, but they did not understand what he was telling them. Therefore, Jesus said again, I tell you the truth. I am the gate for the sheep. All who ever came before me were thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. He will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd. The hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep. So when he sees the wolf come in, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks and the flock and it scatters. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from the Father. at these words, the Jews were again divided. Many of them said, he's demon-possessed and raving mad. Why listen to him? But others said, these are not the sayings of a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? And in John 15, I'm just going to read the first 8 verses here. Jesus said, I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, and I will remain in you. No branch can ever bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not remain in me, he is like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be given you. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. So much packed into those two passages, and I just want to focus on 3 things. And the first one is about how we're needing to understand this authority that Jesus is holding. Understand the authority of Jesus. You know, the place and the importance of shepherd imagery doesn't start here in John's Gospel. It's been there from way back into the Old Testament. And there in the Old Testament, the shepherd imagery, it symbolizes royal character. God is described as the shepherd of Israel, his people. There's some verses there you can go away and have a look at. And all of those places and others alongside them, the emphasis is always on the shepherd figure being the one who cares, who protects, who provides. The shepherd figure is the one who gives his whole life for the sake of the flock. And John reminds us of all of that. John picks up on the shepherd imagery from those places in the Old Testament and records the words of Jesus explaining how he is this shepherd figure. So here in John 10, in the first 3 verses, it's the shepherd who provides the sheep with their places of safety. The sheep know that. They listen carefully for the direction and the instruction of their shepherd's voice, because they know that they can trust it. They know without a doubt that this is the one whose instruction and direction I'm going to follow. I can trust this to happen. Well, who is this shepherd figure that John writes about? We know it. It's obvious. I've already highlighted it. It's Jesus. Simple as that, isn't it? It's Jesus. Who is this shepherd figure who we're to focus on here? These are the words of Jesus. It's not the dominant voice of culture. It's not some political power or society's norms speaking here. This is Jesus. Jesus, who's saying to us, listen to my voice. And then we carry on through John in verses 7 to 10. We have Jesus setting out his role as the shepherd who speaks truth. Compared to those who've gone before him, he says, whose lives and thieves, his sheep did not, lives that who were like thieves, whose lies were like robbers stealing away the truth. His sheep didn't listen to them, but he now comes speaking truth, to enrich truth, to speak it into people's lives. It's Jesus. We have 2 paragraphs that follow here where Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. He doesn't just make that claim, but he explains why. That's the good thing about John chapter 10 is this isn't Jesus just making some big outrageous claim to those listening on. But he explains why. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. And he explains why. He says more, first of all, about protecting the sheep against all kinds of attack. He says it won't be like someone who is just a hired hand doing the job for their own gain. And when pressure comes along, they cave in. When they're under attack, they do a runner and leave the sheep vulnerable. Jesus isn't like that. Instead, through the love of the Father who sent him, Jesus will be the one who will lay down his life for the sheep. Not run away or abandon them when things get difficult, but lay down his life for them. Give them his all. And then Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. I am the gate for the sheep. He's pointing us back towards him all of the time, isn't he? He's pointing us as to him as the one to follow so that we can know life in all its fullness as we take our instruction and direction from him. And then still further on into this same chapter in verses 14 to 18, Jesus is focused there on being the good shepherd for those who already know him and are following him. That's very clear in the words that he's saying. But he doesn't stop there, does he? Jesus isn't just saying, well, I'm the good shepherd for the ones that have got it now, and that's the end of that. He's focused as well on those who aren't yet following, but who can, if they choose, to trust him and listen to his voice and follow it. They're the ones that can know that this direction and instructions over their lives is only ever going to be taking them into good places, places of safety, places of provision, wholeness and well-being. Jesus is focused on those who've already got that and who are following and need that reminder to keep following. And he's focused on those who just haven't quite got it yet or have drifted off and being tempted by other things, and he's pulling them back close to him. He's the one, Jesus, who points us in the right direction towards ways and places of safety and wholeness in his name. We can trust him completely. We can do that without hesitating, without wavering, without giving it a second thought. Follow Jesus without hesitation or wavering. Just look at verses 5 to 6 again, still in chapter 10. We'll get to 15 in a minute. Verses 5 and 6, this is where Jesus makes the comment that those who know and trust the shepherd completely will never change their mind and so follow the voice of a stranger. But here's the thing. If one sheep wanders off to create a whole new adventure of their own, that sheep would have experienced previously the care and provision of the shepherd many, many times before. They would have known that place of safety and care and wholeness and all of those things. But for some reason, here's a moment where this one sheep has decided to go off on their own adventure. What happens now? Jesus has said that his sheep will never change their mind or start to follow the voice of a stranger. So what now? Well, that sheep who's gone off and created their own adventure have got themselves into a whole load of mess that they've not reckoned about coming up against. It's not how it used to be. Life's gotten into a right disaster. They're stuck. They're vulnerable. They're helpless. What now? Jesus has said his sheep will never do that. What now? Well, Jesus carries on and reassures us that the shepherd will notice that they're missing. And once he's got all of the other sheep into a place of safety, he'll go off and search and keep searching for that one missing sheep. The shepherd won't give up until he's found that sheep. He'll rescue it from the mess, clean its wounds, carry it on his shoulders for as long as the sheep needs him to, and bring it back into that place of safety where it belongs. That's what the good shepherd does every single time. Not like the hired hand who gets into a bit of pressure and runs. Or sees one sheep has wandered off and doesn't really care because he's got all these other ones to look after. This is what the good shepherd does every single time. Notices, searches, doesn't give up. Finds, rescues, cleans up, carries. For how long? For a while, for as long as that sheep needs it. That's what Jesus does for us. Every single time we decide to listen to the voice of the stranger, to wander off and do our own thing, every single time Jesus notices. And these things that John, the words of Jesus uses, the analogy here, that's for us. Jesus notices every time we drift. And every time he'll keep looking for us. He won't give up. He'll find us, restore us, and make us like new. John starts, doesn't he, with recording the words of Jesus where there's this clear belief and understanding of who Jesus is. And when we're absolutely and resolutely following his direction and instruction over our lives, we'll never want to move away from it. Why would we? We'll never want to do that. We'll never want to start following the voice of the stranger, as it's described here, instead. Yet he knows. Jesus knows us well enough, doesn't he, to know that even when there's that slightest moment when we might drift a bit, be tempted, do whatever. Jesus knows that he needs to do something, and he'll do everything to seek us out and get things put straight again. Do you know, he'll keep doing that even if it means that he has to be nailed to a cross and give his whole life. And in Jesus' own words, to take it up again after. We've got that celebration coming at Easter, haven't we? Celebrating the death and resurrection of Jesus. This is explaining what that's all about. This is Jesus, the good shepherd, never giving up on us. Follow Jesus. Understand who he is and the fullness of life that he offers to all of us. Just do that. Understand that. Get a hold of it. Have the certainty of faith that we need to keep following without hesitating, without being tempted away, because that's when we'll be able to live in the blessing of the direction and instruction that Jesus gives to us. Live with the blessing of direction and instruction. So anyway, we just turn briefly to John chapter 15. You might flick back to there if you want to. Jesus uses a similar pattern here as in John 10 as his starting point. This time it's a different imagery. This time it's that of a gardener. And in the first four verses of chapter 15, we have the explanation that Jesus is the true vine that his father, the gardener, has nurtured and provided to bear fruit. So he's setting out his credentials again, isn't he? He's setting out his reason why he can say the things that he goes on to say. And he goes on into verses 5 to 8 where he explains that if you stay as a branch attached to the vine, then you're going to stay healthy and bear fruit. But if you don't, if you separate yourself off from that place of health and safety and all of those things that these analogies of the gardener are bringing, then you're going to wither and die. It's quite blunt, isn't it? If you drill into it in that way. But that's what Jesus is saying. We're told that any branches that have stopped bearing fruit are going to be cut off and thrown into the fire and burned. Do you know what? That makes me feel more like wanting to be back with that shepherd who no matter what, isn't going to give up. If I wander off and get into a mess, the shepherd's going to keep coming looking for me and keep going and keep going. But listen, just notice here what's happened time and time again, probably, before we get to the place where the branch is withered and gone. The gardener has been pruning it and tending to it and caring for it, getting rid of the bits that don't kind of work how they're supposed to anymore, so that that plant can grow and flourish in the way that it's intended to do. This is what Jesus does for us. Helps us with those bits that aren't quite where they should be. Deals with the rubbish of life that can happen when we choose to stop following his direction and his instruction. He'll keep doing that for as long as it takes, for as long as we'll let him. But you know, if we choose to stop letting that happen, if we choose to let other things other than Jesus shape our lives, direct us, then that flourishing is going to stop. If we choose to let that happen, we need to understand that the consequences are not horrendous. Just look at verses 9 through to 17 here in this chapter with me, because this is where we see a huge directive and instructive push from Jesus. Let me read these verses to you. So this is chapter 15 from verse 9. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. If you obey my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have obeyed my Father's commands and remain in his love. I've told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I learned from the Father I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you to go and bear fruit, fruit that will last. Then the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. This is my command: love each other. Verse 12, Jesus is so clear. Love one another as I have loved you. That's it. Live in the ways of love that Jesus is showing us and continues to show us. When we follow his instruction and direction, we'll know the care and protection and safety that the shepherd gives to us, won't we? We'll be tended to by the gardener who helps get rid of the rubbish bits of life so that we can grow and flourish and experience life in all its fullness. That's how the gospel is directive and instructive, is a blessing for us to follow. It's not a burden, it's a blessing. Because it leads us into all that God has for us. It removes the brokenness of life through his love and grace so that we can know life in all its fullness. Our lives can be transformed in Jesus' name. When we understand this, and when we're living it and following it, then we will know the blessing of the instruction and direction that Jesus gives to us. So what are we going to do with this? What difference are we going to let this make to us? You know, I said earlier on that, you know, generally speaking, is a bit of a generalization perhaps, but you know, the world we live in doesn't like the thought of living by the direction and instruction of somebody else. And so we see so many situations that are just screaming out in pain through a way of living with a different attitude, an attitude that says, oh, anything goes, I don't really care about anybody else, I'm just going to focus on me, and if it works for me, then I'm going to do it. If we go back to the Old Testament for a moment, and this time the Ten Commandments, they're all about direction and instruction, aren't they? But you know, so often they're misunderstood, they're misrepresented, they're positioned in a completely wrong way. So often the Ten Commandments are positioned like this. Don't you dare do that! Don't murder because it's, well, it hurts people. Don't steal because that stuff's mine, not yours. Don't disrespect God because that's just not nice. Do you know, have you heard it like that before? Have you been taught that in the past? You know, that whole attitude of the anger coming out somehow in the Ten Commandments. That's not what they're there for. They're about saying things with love and grace. Like this. Don't treat people like that. Don't hurt them. Because it's going to hurt you. And it's going to hurt your community. And it's not God's best for you. There's a big difference in those two ways of approaching instruction and direction, isn't there? And if we think that following the instruction and direction of Jesus is going to be like that first example I've just given, then just think again, because the instruction and direction of Jesus over our lives, yeah, he might need to be firm and give us a bit of a slap at times, but probably we deserve that. Most of the time, Jesus is going to be the one who's sitting with us and going, really? What's going on? Let's have a chat about that. Let's work this through. Following the instruction and direction of Jesus is about embracing all that's life-giving in the way that he'll give it to us. And some of those listening to Jesus in chapter 10 concluded, he is demon-possessed and raving mad. Don't listen to him. We could choose to do that. We could make that our response today if we want to. There are plenty of things that we're influenced by each day that scream that at us, that don't listen to Jesus. He's just raving mad. But it carries on. John 10:21 says, others concluded, these are not the sayings of a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? That's referring back to one of the miracles that Jesus has already done. So we're left with this decision to make, aren't we? Which voice are we going to listen to the most? Is it going to be the one that says, don't listen to him? He's raving mad. Don't listen to him. Or is it going to be the voice of Jesus who says to us, I've come so that you can know life in all its fullness. Follow me. Listen to my direction and instruction, and so find true life. We need to make that decision, which of those voices we're going to follow. And we're going to create some space for that to happen this morning, for us to have space to pray, whether that's quietly on our own, whether it's with somebody else, or you want to go to the prayer corner over there and have somebody come pray with you. Which of these voices are we going to listen to? Is it the other voice, or is it the voice of Jesus? The life-giving light of the world.